You are very welcome to Cawley's Call with me, Alan Cawley, powered by Benetti Menswear, a topical debate show covering all things Irish football, along with 1v1 interviews with top-class sports stars from a wide range of different sports.
It's me that's putting on the green jersey, me that's going to take flak from people to say, you're not even Irish. I was big enough to say, I'm going to take it.
There's many people I've spoke to, they always say, I used to put money on you scoring the first goal, but I've never seen any of that money, though.
And Andy, he says, I want the performances that I got from you in Scotland with you under 16s, not that rubbish that you gave me over in Oslo. Yeah.
Hi everyone, and you're very welcome to Series 2, Episode 20 of Cawley's Call. It's good to have you back again. Another busy show lined up, so we're not going to have the usual shy talk about holidays at the start.
Am I only back in holidays?
I milked the holidays for 2 weeks, Stu.
I'm going to get it in at some stage.
We'll have a chat later on about your holidays. You were away for a couple of days as well, so. But we've such a busy show because obviously the Cup was at the weekend. We're back to league action. The draw took place last night. We'll go into the draw. I may have caused...
You're getting it big time off me.
I may have caused a few rumblings last night with the draw. And obviously the European games as well. So we've a lot to get through, Stu. Busy show. But before we do all that, I'm delighted to say that our guest this week is a former teammate of mine. I'm sure he used to run around you as well, Stu, at some stage. But he went to England, then Scotland, carved out a great career for himself. And he's still over there. So we're delighted to say on the line is Mr. Gary Dicker. Gary, how are you?
How's it going, lads? Not bad.
Good, good. How are you?
I'm good. Still working. It's a bit of a longer day now that I'm doing a bit of playing and coaching, so getting used to the longer hours, as they say.
Hold on a minute now, Gar. Before we go anywhere, right? Footballers don't work. Let's be honest. So don't be giving it that when I'm still working just because it's coming up to 5 o'clock.
Definitely. And also, hey, listen, it's 24 hours a day. Being a footballer, you know that.
We've got that violin. I told you to bring it.
We'll get the violin out for Gar. But obviously, as you say, Gar, you are going down the coaching road now, so it is busier days. We will come to that. But before we get to all that, we want to just take you back through a few of the years, relive some of the memories. And of course, I first came across you as a young boy at UCD, and you were a little whippersnapper. And even though I thought I was a whippersnapper, you were an even smaller whippersnapper. And that's where it all started for you. So do you look back on that time with fond memories?
Yeah, listen, I loved that at UCD. There's some great pros there. When I was there with Tony Mack, Alan Mann, Al McNally, even Robbie Martin was a young, older player there. So, and then obviously Mick O'Donnell and a lot of lads that you probably know as well. And that was a great ground for me, because I was at that stage where you probably think you're a failure because you've not gone away and stuff like that, and your career's over, isn't it, when you don't leave Ireland at 16. So no, it was great to go into that men's dressing room and to learn from all them lads. It was a massive help with me in my career, and probably made me realise that it wasn't over and there was a different route to go.
Yeah, I'm the same, Gar. I look back with so many fond memories from my time at UCD, and there's a lot of people, a lot of detractors towards UCD, maybe because of the off-the-field stuff in terms of maybe no crowds and what do they bring. But in terms of players coming through and going on to play, as you say, you went across the water like so many others, but the amount of lads that have come through and gone and played in the league, there really is a place for UCD in Irish football.
Yeah, definitely. They were even miles ahead with strength and conditioning. Mm. I remember we had Lee Sitt and John that were there that were doing it. They were miles ahead of it, doing all that stuff. We had great facilities out there and all the pitches and stuff like that. But obviously, they don't bring crowds to the league and stuff like that. But the amount of players they produced over the years, even long before I was there, and they're still doing it now. So, I enjoyed it. And I met some great people along the way there as well. And I'll always look out and see how they're doing as well.
You mentioned something there, Gar, that's interesting, just the fact that you were probably a late bloomer, as you say, and you never went away at 16, 17 like so many other lads at the time. It's slightly different now. A lot more lads go kind of through the league route and then go away like what you did. But back then, you mentioned that because you didn't go away at 15, 16, did you think that you'd never get your chance or you'd never get your opportunity?
Yeah, definitely. I think when you're not in the Ireland setups and stuff like that, everyone's gone away. Listen, I went away in trials to many clubs, but I don't think I was ready for it. My parents weren't really big into football, so they weren't really pushing it either, but they probably didn't know too much about football and and how cutthroat it is and ruthless it is. And I didn't settle going away. I used to hate going away and staying. And honestly, I used to hate it going and staying in digs. I don't know what you used to like, think about it, but I used to hate going and staying with family. And I never settled, really, to be honest with you. And then, obviously, playing League of Ireland, I'm like, came back and probably gave me a bit more hunger than to get away. And I was probably more mature and grown up. And I was going over there to play and not kind of being a youth team and be a development player. Kind of, I was going over there after playing 2 years and a year in the first division and a year in the Premier Division. And it helped me massively.
That's the word, mature, Gary, because as I say, I went away as a boy, and that's all you are as a boy, like going away at 15, 16. It's ridiculous, really, when you think about it. And I know a lot, it has worked out for many others that have gone at that age. But I'm of the view now, having kind of looked at, going on my own experiences and having looked at lads that have gone away that bit later, and especially the way Irish football is now in the league here, and because of the way English football is as well, and you're obviously very close at hand with young lads now at Brighton, but I'm very much of the view now that you're far better off playing here in the league, getting your 50 games, 100 games under your belt, rather than going away at 15 or 16, getting caught up in a net of kind of lads from all over the world, not just the home nations, and going away with that experience and that bit more maturity and going into a first team environment rather than actually just going into a youth academy setup.
Yeah, I think you said it there. Now you're not just up against English, Irish, Scottish lads, you're up against everyone from all over the world. We've got boys from everywhere, in the 23s, even dropping down to the 18s, so it's getting harder. Most clubs do sell you the dream of going over, as you know. And but one thing I'll say about Brighton here is they're really good off the pitch here with players, and we've got a lot of Irish lads here at the moment, and you've got a lot of not psychologists, but you've got a lot of mental coaches that they use here now, and making sure everyone's in the right frame of mind. We just sent the lad out on loan to Aberdeen, and we had a 2-hour meeting about his loan move, just how they can help him off the pitch with his loan move, how he's going to react to disappointments of being out on loan for the first time, not being involved. He might be in the stand 1 week, he might be playing. So they've done a profile on him, on his behaviours and how his childhood has been and what his family situation is and stuff like that. So it's proper moved on, but that's not going to happen at every club you go to when you're going to England, and you're not going to get that care. John Morling, who's the head of the academy here, he obviously worked for the FEI for years as well. So it's a really good club here and how they look after it, but you don't get that at every club, as you know.
Yeah, and on that as well, Gary, because as you say, for people that don't know, since you've finished up with Kilmarnock, you're gone back as a player coach with the under-23s, and as an overage player, you're still going to play, but very much with the coaching in mind. But I've read up a lot on Brighton, and just the off-the-field stuff. I'm a big fan of Graham Potter. Also, the work Dan Ashworth is obviously involved with the England setup, and now he's gone in with Brighton and the academy director and all that kind of stuff. And they really are a fantastic club. So for you, starting off in terms of your coaching, you couldn't be at a better place, really.
No, definitely. I actually had to come in and meet Dan before I got the job. But I'm like you, I've only seen him from afar and how impressive he is and how he does things. He's got his hand in everything. He knows every player. He knows every screw that's going into the wall. He's interested in everyone. He wants to know what's in the building first before they go out and buy. I think they topped the Premier League for academy minutes. I think Man United were second. And that was a 10-year plan at Brighton. So they're always thinking outside the box. They're a really progressive club like that. And people they have running the club, as you said, is probably one of the best in Europe at the moment, not alone the Premier League. So with my role, it's perfect to learn. There's so many to learn from here, and I was just delighted and grateful to get the role.
It's a fantastic environment, yeah, for yourself, because I remember watching an interview with Dan Ashworth on BT. It kind of went viral afterwards, 8 or 9 minute clip on social media. For anyone who hasn't seen it, just in terms of his role and his development and what he does. And as I say, he came from the England setup, and look at all the amount of brilliant players have come through that setup. And obviously he's with Brighton now, but also Graham Potter. Have you much dealings with them, Gar, when the role came about to obviously go back? You mentioned that you had a chat with Dan, but in terms of what they're looking for you to provide, how hands-on maybe is the first team manager?
Right now at the minute, obviously because of COVID, it's been a bit different, but when COVID loosens up, we'll be all getting changed together. So all the staff get changed together, the 23 and the first team staff, which is probably unique. That doesn't probably happen at any other club. Well, I've never heard of it, where all the first team gaffer, the staff and the 23s and all be getting changed. Everyone gets changed together. So it's really integrated like that. Everyone's in it. It's just so everyone gets used to each other, bounces off each other and stuff like that. I've only met him once. He came in and done a meeting with the under 23s about what he expects, how tough football's going to be. He said, basically, I want everyone to be over there, but the harsh reality is Ollie's ain't going to come over there and get into the first team. And basically saying that's not the end of the road either for you. So that was the only first dealing, but really impressive guy as well, how he speaks. And he's still young as well. So, no, it's great. So I'm obviously looking forward to that, where I'll be getting changed with the first team staff and picking their brains as well.
Yeah, I think I'm, as I say, I'm a huge fan, Gary, of what to do with Brighton and Potter. But especially now, Stu, he's obviously here at me as well, Gary, but especially now, even what we're reading in, I suppose, the headlines the last couple of days, look at Simone Biles, and it's becoming more prevalent with people with mental health, superstars with mental health as well, normal human beings. I'm watching the Naomi Osaka documentary as well. Unbelievable talent, but troubled individual in terms of her thoughts and her mind and what's going on and how the pressure that's on her to succeed and stuff like that. Isn't it brilliant to hear, like, a club? And to be fair, Gary, I think you could back this up. I don't think it's just lip service with Brighton. They actually care about the human beings as well, not just the footballers or the talent that's coming through.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's 10 to 15 full-time staff that they have that are here. I think half of them would be the first team, half of them 23s, and then they'll have another batch again that are with the academy. So it's a full-on department they have here. It's not, oh, we've got someone, she's in once a week, if you want to go see her, go see her, you know, that kind of way. It's proper player care that you have here. And it's not just the whole, oh, we just have a chat, how are you? It's proper stuff, because you know what it's like. You go see someone, you're like, oh, I've not done this, or don't feel great. And they have a few people that are ex-pros as well, that are come in. And sometimes it helps when you know someone knows what they're talking about with football as well. Because sometimes you want to talk football terms and they mightn't understand. So, now that side of it, as I said, with the players out on loan, I couldn't believe the detail they went in just to look after them mentally, more so than how they are getting on. Because you think usually when you go out on loan, you don't really hear from anyone. Someone might watch a game and say, oh, you've done all right, but you mightn't be in the team in November, December, pissing rain, and you're thinking, oh, well, this is the biggest waste of a loan ever. So they're on the ball, really. We've got a loans manager, David Ware, who obviously had a great career. So he looks after, he's got a great relationship with all the loan players and looks after them that way. And then you've got the mental health guys that are there as well, helping them. So they're really covering every base and they're helping everyone, because, as you said, it is massive in sport now, and it's getting harder for the younger boys as well, and the expectation is rising.
How have you coped with that, Gary? Because, this is obviously very... it's been, sports psychology has been, in the game for a long time, but it's, the mental health side of it has been a big thing in the last couple of years. And we're definitely transitioning from that period, because you even said yourself, you don't see it. You haven't seen a psychologist at any other club, correct? But you're seeing it here. But for you as a coach, as a young coach as well, you're transitioning from being a player to a coach. You come from, you would have experienced none of this when you played. How has that been for you, that you've had to have you had to take a step back and consume that side of the game, or how have you kind of coped with it in understanding it?
I think I've been amazed by it more so than step back and learning myself, because as I said, we have an office up there and I'll sit beside the psychologist or the mental health person and you're chatting, and he'll be probing at me, about the group and how each person's looking, because he'll obviously know them a little bit better. He's been here longer. But no, it's been brilliant. As I said, I've no doubt that if I had a bit more, even to ask Alan or yourself, that over the years, you always go through patches and stages in your career where you probably are feeling a bit of pressure, or you're not playing well, or you might be carrying an injury and you're still playing, or something off the pitches is not right. So I think it's been brilliant, and it's a learning curve for me as well. As it's kind of new to me, as you touched on, and it's an area that I think everybody can improve skills, and you probably learn yourself how to cope with different things as a manager or as a coach. If a player comes up with a problem, you're learning the different skill sets or little strategies, or else you have someone to go to and say, well, he probably doesn't want to talk to you. He's probably more comfortable talking to me about it first. So I'll be leaning on the psychologist and stuff like that myself for help. So, no, it's really good that way. And it's a side that, as you said, I think more needs to be done at every level about it, because the pressure is getting bigger.
On that as well, Gary, because you're a young man, you're only 34, obviously, as I say, you're still playing with the over 23s. But even though you are young and 34, you would have started in the same as myself and Stewie, in like a very much old school mentality, cutthroat dressing rooms, fellas ranting and raving, roaring and shouting. Now I love that, Gar, and sometimes I think it's gone too far the other way. But the likes of this stuff, I think, can only be helpful. And this is relatively new. I know we're praising Brighton a lot, and rightly so. But, and it's probably down to resources as well, that all the other clubs can't kind of go to the detail that maybe they're going to. But it is becoming more and more prominent in the game.
Yeah, I think I agree with you a bit there as well. I think you can lose some of it where the ranting and raving. I think some of it, as you know, maybe a bit over the top before in the past. But I think the world's changed. People are changing. Coaching's changing, let alone the mentality in the dressing room. So you got to move with the times, I think, as well. I think social media is massive these days, how people see themselves. So we probably were a bit more thick-skinned back then, but we weren't as open to Instagram and how many followers you get or how many likes you have and the pressure of that side of things. Because everyone makes out to living the best life, or everyone's doing great at football, where sometimes you might be struggling. So, I think the dressing room is... I think you still have that. They don't discourage that here at Brighton, as if to say everything isn't a pat on the back and everything's going to be all rosy. You talk about it. They've got a good understanding of football. I think with Dan Ashworth's background, he was an academy coach himself. He'd done a lot of coaching over the years, and I think they all understand that role as well perfectly. So I think it's finding the right balance these days, because I don't think you can say the old school wasn't right, because it still produced a lot of players, but some of it maybe the extreme parts where you wouldn't get away with it now with stuff that going on in the dressing room. But I've enjoyed it, to be honest. I've been used to it in football, as you know, in the last few years. It's a young man's game anyway. Dressing rooms have been getting younger and younger, the players. So I've been used to it the last few years, to be honest with you.
You would have witnessed, Dacker, this fascinates me, because I'm very much, as you say, our dressing room, the old school. Now, we use social media, but I'm very much against the social media that people just go on and slate people and do whatever. People that use it wrongly, to be fair. And I think there's a place for good as well. But we're speaking as retired players, and we don't see how prominent it is for young people coming up in the game now. But as you say, you would have played through the transition of seeing this become a more and more prominent. Twitter, Instagram, as you say, young lads wanting to go on, posting pictures of themselves, blah, 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 coming in after a game. The fans were great. We go again. All this shite.
Yeah.
But is there something at the club there where the likes of Dan Ashworth, Potter, do they have any kind of mantra against using that kind of thing, or encouraging it for the young lads or anything like that?
No, they've got a social media. I think they've got two or three people that are there to help people with their social media to understand what it is all about, as when you are a public figure as well, what you can and can't do, what they expect from it. So they do cover that area here as well. I remember, as you said, I played through. I remember I came off Twitter at one stage about 2 years as well, because I thought, I can't be arsed with this shit. I've got enough people moaning at me on a Saturday. I don't want to hear a fucking after the final whistle as well, you know what I mean? So whereas you didn't really have a blanket of going to speak to someone, then I thought, I'll just get rid of it, because I couldn't have been bothered with it. But then you do mature and you get older and you realise, listen, in football, the only opinion that matters is the managers and your teammates, because if you're not doing your job right, you won't be in the team. and them two will be the first to get on to you about that, not Barry up in the stand that thinks he knows everything about football. So I think it is, but it is changing like that. I said the pressure with that, and as you said, anybody can go on there and say anything to you, and you can't say anything back, and that's the hard part being a footballer. I think, you know, you've had a shy game, you come in, someone's caning you, someone else jumps on it, and the minute you say something back, you're the one that's going to get a ban or a fine from the FA, which is disappointing in a way as well, because everyone says, oh, footballers, everyone comes out, as you said, our fans were great, but you come out and say something, it's everywhere, and you're either getting slated for it, or you're getting a ban for it, or the club aren't happy with it. So it's a tough one as well for players, I think, to give something back, because if you get too much back, you're only going to get in hot water with either the club or the FA if it's something that isn't the PC.
The reason that you're back, obviously, with Brighton now and in that coaching role as well, Gar, because for people that might not have known, you had 4 great years there as a player as well, and obviously you got promoted to the Championship. Before I get to that, because I want to ask you about the relationship that you would have had with the club, even though you've been away from it for 8 years, was there always that connection with him, and that's why you're back there now? But before you answer that, we have to give Jim Gannon a mention as well, because that's where he obviously went over.
Oh, fucking hell. I want to take that fella. Worse than you.
But obviously, Jim was very good to you in terms of that's where you would have made your name initially with Stockport, 2 good years that would have got you to move to Brighton initially.
No, brilliant. Listen, he took a chance for me and took me over there, paid a few quid for me as well. Brilliant coach. Fantastic coach. I'm not sure. Did you play with him at Shelves?
I did. Like, Jim used to read coaching manuals on the coach going to games and all, you know, just sitting his own reading.
Would he,
Yeah. He was a coach. He was like
the coach playing.
He was a coach playing. Yeah, he was. Yeah.
Oh no, he was brilliant coaching wise. See his sessions, his style of play, his understanding of the game was honestly brilliant. I loved coaching. His coaching and playing under him, but just his man management skills. And as I said, we're a young group. One week you play well on the Saturday and you train bad on the Monday, and he'd drop you for the Saturday because you didn't train well on the Monday. You're a bit like, fucking hell, I can't deal with this here. You know what I mean? And he'd be like, nah, swap that bit. And you'd be thinking, it's Monday, gaffer. I just got man of the match Saturday. But like, nah, you're not playing Saturday. It's quite hard to deal with, as I said. When you're that young, you're 21, you're thinking, what's going on here? I thought I'd done all right, but I've trained bad on Monday and he's not put me in the team for Saturday. It's 5 days away. but for the opportunity, and in fairness, I learnt loads under him. I got a promotion, got to play at Wembley. We went up a league straight away. I matured a lot. It took me a good 6 months, to be honest with you, to settle into to training every day, the demands of it, having fans. It was a big club, to be fair, still is a big club. So, I owe a lot to Stockport and to Jim for that. I'm surprised, and I think that's the only thing that's held him back in the game, because there's no way he should be coaching where he was coaching. I know he'd left Stockport in the conference, but for me, he definitely should be coaching at a higher level. But I just think maybe his people skills and man management sometimes can hold you back. And you know what it's like in football, there's no secrets in football. And I think that's probably the only reason why, because his coaching is top draw.
It's interesting, yeah. I've only ever heard good reports about him coaching-wise as well. That obviously took you to Brighton then, Gar, and 4 great years. And I suppose then you got the promotion to the Championship. As I say, were you disappointed when it ended at Brighton at the time that it did, or were you hoping to stay on?
It was a strange one. We obviously got beat in the playoffs against Palace, which was a massive disappointment for the club. Obviously, they're our rivals as well. But the manager was leaving, Gus was leaving. He had a fallout with the club, and it was all a bit messy and sticky. And then I ended up leaving. No, definitely I would have stayed. Listen, it was a club that was always on the up. I know when people say, oh, you know, the whole Premier League ready stuff, but with the chairman here, it was only going to go one way, this club. It might have had a few bumps in the road, but they were always going to get to the Premier League. The training ground, the stadium, he's pumped so much money into the club to get it ready, and he's a clever man, and it's a progressive club. Next stop is a top 10. So no, listen, I was devastated because you never want to leave a good club and a big club because you know what's coming with the club. You knew it was always going to get to the next step. So, no, it was tough. I spoke to him in person, actually, the chairman, when it happened. He didn't have to do that. He could have easily got someone else to come in and do that job. So when I'd left, yeah, it was difficult, to be honest. I was so used to it, to a way of playing as well. I probably had 2 or 3 years after that where it was a bit scattered and didn't understand why everyone didn't want to play football in a certain way, and kind of having to adapt again to 11v11 and you beat your man, basically, which is a lot of managers are these days.
And was the door always open with Brighton? Is that how the role came about to go back there, Gary?
No, not really, to be honest. Obviously, kept my house down here. My wife and all the kids are down here. I only live 10 minutes away from the training ground. But no, it wasn't really. I'd done my badges quite early, to be honest with you, in my career. Sound a bit like Jim Gannon here. I was always taking notes.
That's exactly who you sound like, yeah.
So I was always interested in that side of it. I'd done the reserves up in Kilmarnock for 4 years. I helped out up there. I was asked to help out with the first team when the manager left last year. And then I spoke to John Moreland a few times and I just came in and was just asked her to come in and just have a look about the place, see how they do things, because I was intrigued with what was going on, because they didn't have an academy when I was here. They had 3 staff. They've now got, I think, it's in the hundreds now, wow, the staff, the academy. And I came in and John was brilliant with me, invited me over. I watched training and had a chat with him. And then it wasn't really set in stone or anything. And then the manager left for Stockport. He took Jim's job. So then the 23's manager, Crofty, was doing the player coach role, Andrew Crofts. And then I had a chat with John in the summer and he said, listen, we don't know whether we're going to do the role again or not. I'll let you know. And then he rang me and just said, Dan Ashford wants to see you. So I was panicking, you know, that way. I was thinking, what is this? I've never had an interview in my life. Don't even know if it was an interview. He didn't even say what it was. He just said, Dan wants to see you. So I was straight into town trying to get a pair of chinos. You know yourself.
What fucking year was this,
Gary? I've any amount of chinos if you want to pair, Gary.
I was Googling your images to see what you've been wearing the last few weeks.
I could have fixed you up with a suit, no problem, Gary.
Oh, yeah. I've seen that, yeah. So I was one of them because I've never had an interview or a normal or a chat. I didn't know what way it was going to go, but I came in and I think there was a good few other people in for the role as well. I had a meeting with Dan Ashford for about an hour and then we finished the meeting. So I thought, I'll probably hear something in a few weeks. And then he just offered me the job as I was leaving. John Moreland just looked at me and started laughing and says, oh, I got the job.
Brilliant.
See you tomorrow. And then I started the next day. So,
brilliant.
Yeah, it was, whether he knew he was giving me the job or not, I don't know. But
well, I can tell you, I hire people, they knew they were giving you the job. You were headhunted and basically everyone else that was there was just there.
Is that
for
how it works?
Yeah, they were just there for show.
Okay.
You were getting
there. You go, Gar. So
hang on to them chinos. They'll come back into fashion sometime.
Why would you be worrying about an interview when you just obviously cruised it there?
Yeah, I know, he's one of them. But as you said, I'd only seen him on the telly. I think he's an impressive guy, isn't he, as
impressive.
Well, like that. You know what I mean?
Gary, you've been absolutely brilliant with your time. And just before we let you go, I just want to talk to you briefly about, obviously, you had 5 years at Kilmarnock, did ever so well. Of course, we all tune into the Scottish football over here with the link with Celtic and Rangers. But for you, a young lad, young Dublin boy as well, to play against Celtic and obviously Rangers, it must have been some feeling and going up against them.
I was unbelievable. I think it gets a bit of a bad... It's a bit like the Irish League, to be fair. With England and some of that, it gets a bit of a... It's a bit of a dog and duck league, as they say, or it's not great, but I loved it up there. Some big clubs up there. I know you talk about your Celtic and Rangers. You've got your Hearts, Hibs, your Dundees, your Aberdeens, your 20,000 you're playing against. And they love it up there. It's their league, which I think Ireland... That's what when I look at Ireland, you think... I know it's obviously not as big as Scotland or as big as clubs, but gives you inspiration that the Irish League could do it. You know what I mean? They love their football up there. They love their clubs, the hometown clubs. Everyone goes. And it's a great opportunity, I think, for young lads starting maybe, instead of going to a Premier League club, maybe going to a Celtic or a Hearts or a Hibs or a or one of them, and getting yourself in the window. It's all about Scotland up there, front back page. You get great media, you get great exposure up there, and I loved it. Had a great time.
It's their league, their industry. That's obviously what we're trying to create here, Gary. Things have moved on slightly, I suppose, since you were here, but still 15 years later, you'd expect us to have made a bit better progress, but slowly but surely we're getting there, Gar. But listen, it's been an absolute pleasure. I've always had great time for you. I really wish you well in the new role with Brighton. As I say, I'm a big fan of the club anyway, but the fact that you're there now, I'll be looking out for the under-23s, and hopefully if Graham Potter ever moves on, wear them chinos into the interview, you might get the job.
I'll tell you what.
They're lucky chinos there.
They'll be painted onto me.
Well, listen, Gar, thanks a million for your time, and no problem. Wish you well.
Cheers, lad.
Take care, Gary.
Cheers, Stu.
There you go. Now, Stu, Gary Dicker, a blast from the past, the young lad, wee whippersnapper, running rings around me. So, yeah, a great lad.
Ah, yeah, he was. With Belvedere, wasn't he? Was he Belvedere at schoolboy? I thought I was stuck in my head for some reason.
I don't know why.
Never got a chance to ask him. Remember, do you know what I actually really liked about him? He was technically excellent, you know, very good. Great engine as well, I have to say. And he kind of had everything, didn't he, really? But you know what he had? He had a little bit of bite in him, you know, which I always liked.
Oh, he did, yeah.
He had a little bit of needle. I loved that. I love that in a player. I really do. And because he was technically very good, could pass. And I think that's how he operated at UCD. Playmaker role, whatever, like, you know. But he had a great engine, so he loved to get forward and all. But he had a bit of a bite about him, like, you know. And he'd bit of a grumpy head as well.
He would have needed that back then.
Yeah, I really liked that in a player, like, you know. And controlled. Wasn't, you know, could leave the foot in. But, look, those days, weren't they?
There's a bit of a trend starting here. We had Alan Moore last week, and you were complimenting him on being a nasty little piece of work. And now we've carried.
I love it. Look,
the first thing. Why do you love these kickers?
I love a dirty bastard. I really do. Especially when someone has it coming to them. So just go over and fucking smash him, will you? And just shut him up. I love that. Yeah,
I would have stayed out of all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, you were the ones I probably would have sent somebody after. Said, can you see that collie
they couldn't
fella?
Catch me. That was the thing.
Fucking
they couldn't
smash
catch
him.
Me. But listen, Stu, yeah, it's been a mad week. When you think back of obviously last week, we were previewing the European games. It seems like a month ago that obviously Dundalk played against Levadia Tallinn and Bowes played against Doodlelange. Bowes had a brilliant result, winning 1-0 away from home. The second leg is tomorrow. I'm heading along. I'm really looking forward to 8,000 sellout again.
8,001 now.
8,002 Harry's coming as well, and it's they've given themselves a brilliant chance with obviously the performance in the first leg, winning 1-0.
I genuinely thought the best they could hope for here was a draw. Absolutely. When they went 1-0 up, I couldn't believe it. Funnily enough, I was giving out earlier on about Eric Lawler messaging you. He's messaging me now.
Look,
it's great. But
Eric's our new.
He was keeping me up to speed with the whole thing, and. Like, what a result, Al.
Brilliant.
What a result. That's a hell, like, that's a proper away result. That, like, they're a very, very good side. They've got very good pedigree in Europe.
They've been in group stages.
And people may not realise this. Yeah, absolutely.
And picking up points in group stages as well.
Picking up points, yeah. Fair play to the person who recorded the goal on his camera phone.
John, I think it was John O'Connor, Bulls fan.
He stuck with it, in fairness. And we got a great angle of the pass as well from Dawson DeVoy. Yeah,
it was a wonderful
pass. Yeah, but I know they scored and they certainly soaked up an awful lot of pressure then. But they coped. I mean, that experience is going to be huge for them. Mm. You know, and Doodlelange. Now this is where the psychology is huge, and we touched on it last week as well about when to press the button. You know, when to step back. Like, you know, they're now going. Bowes are now going into a home game. 8,000 Bowes fans are going to be at it, and we saw the noise they made in the previous round. 6,000. They need to make that count now. They need to put these guys under serious pressure and said, "You're not coming here to get any kind of a."
People were really interested. Actually, I got a lot of comments about, like, exactly as you said, the insight we were given last week in terms of the psychology of the European games, and we went back to Hajduk and a couple of the games. Bowes, as you said, are winning 1-0 now. The approach tomorrow night, you're going in there with 8,000 fans. Do you go after them from minute one straight away?
See, I think that you have to be proactive. Yeah, you can't be stupid now either.
Like, yeah, you know, I don't mean gung-ho mad
exactly.
stuff.
That's what we learn, and that's what we've all learned in Europe about how where's that balance between, like, there's a huge difference between playing in a domestic game and going for it, and then playing in Europe and going for it. You'll get hurt. You'll concede.
Higher level, you get punished.
Much higher level. You get punished. These guys only need one or two chances, but they have to, and I know they have this in them, Bows, because they've got Keith Buckley, you know, he's a skipper in there, like, you know, and again another one has a little bit of needle about him, like, you know, you have to get in their face. You have to let them know you're in trouble here, you know you're not going to come over here, nice big stadium, nice pitch.
These lads as well are still in pre-season. The game last week will benefit them, but they're still in pre-season.
But they'll be hurting now from that, and they'll be under big pressure, you know, and I imagine there's a big wage bill at the club and all. That all matters, and it all matters. It's all a positive factor for Bowes. For Bowes, you have to make that count, you know. They've gone away there. They've gone and won the game. So, you know, we're not talking about being cocky here, whatever, but we're talking about standing up, don't let them play, don't let them start, get after them, you're at home,
and to be fair,
make them work for it and get the crowd behind you as well, because that's huge for Bowes.
Yeah.
Huge. And when someone's doodle on here is that crowd, I'll tell you.
And the one good thing with this Bowes team in particular, even more so than the last 3 or 4 years, the one thing I really love about them, and I know there's a lot of young lads, but they play with that energy and enthusiasm. Shoe Tierney's full of energy, Devoy, Ali Coop gets around the pitch, Bert is a little flyer up and down the wing, Tyreek Wilson loves to get forward, you have Lyons on the far side, Buckley will be that safety net sitting in front of them, you have Dawson pulling strings, but they do play with an energy, so that can only benefit them, as you say, in terms of going out, getting after these lads and not letting them rest, because they'll see the Aviva, beautiful pitch, they'll think we want to put on a bit of a show, but if you get in their faces and do your stuff, you're not allowing them play.
Yeah, and you have to understand, Doodle Ange are a, like we said, they're a seasoned European team, right? They're at it. When that tip off goes, if Doodle Ange look at Bowes and say these are keeping it for 5-10 minutes or sitting off, bang, they're gonna go after them, because they have to. They know they have to. Mm. But if it's the other, you know, if Doodle Ange sense These are coming at us, like, you know, they're at it, you know, they're closing us down, they're snapping at us, a little, you know, little bit of needle, a few words, nothing wrong with it, like, you know, you don't have to be overly aggressive, don't do anything stupid, of course, with regards, your discipline has to be good, but you have to let them know right from the start, you're in trouble, and you're not getting out of trouble, like, you know, so it's a psychology thing. I always found it's a psychology thing. I mean, look, there's all sorts of stereotypical phrases for it, you know, win your battle with your man and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, you have to carry yourself in a way. Let them know, you know. And how many times have you gone out, you know, abroad, and you see this fella, you know, swaggering around the place, and you say, Jesus, you know, like, you kind of, you know, you're in the presence of somebody, like, you know, mate, you have to carry yourself.
Yeah.
Confidence. People
Absolutely.
Sense confidence.
Swagger.
Exactly. A bit of a swagger. People sense confidence. And they also sense the other way when you're kind of faking it, when you're saying that, look, these aren't at it, let's get after them, like, you know, that's how it works. That's the psychology part of it. If they do all everything else right, which they're well capable of doing, defend properly, you know, the usual stuff, get your set pieces right, all that stuff, tick all the boxes, then they've a hell of a chance. And we spoke about this group stage of stuff as well.
Yeah.
The money's the same as Europa League.
Unbelievable. Exactly.
I can't believe this.
Exactly.
I never saw this coming at all. Yeah. I'll be quite honest with you, I was put up by the name of it.
Yeah.
Europa Conference League, and kind of go, oh, what's this? Some sort of Mickey Mouse sort of toward hand.
It's kind of a leveler for the
money's
for
unbelievable.
Unreal shoe.
Unbelievable.
You have Shamrock Rovers, who were obviously got the buy into the third round, so they're playing next week against an Albanian team, Tueta. Like, they'll fancy their chances.
What
massive.
A chance we have. And, you know, this could be the year. This could be the year where two clubs make a huge breakthrough in Europe, you know. And I'm talking financially. Like, you know, if either of those boys can get into the group stages of that competition,
the difference it'll make.
Oh, huge.
You've obviously, so that's the Bowes one. As I say, we're heading in tomorrow night. I'm looking forward to the game, Stu. I'm really looking forward to going in, actually. Hopefully it's a nice evening as well. But Dundalk are away against Levadia Tallinn. Tougher game, probably, in Estonia. They drew 2-2 last week. Couple of sloppy goals they gave away. 2 goals early in the match as well. It was 2-2 at half time. But it's a tougher ask, I think, for Dundalk tomorrow.
Yeah, I played over there if it's the same ground that I played in, I don't think, you know, look, I don't think the trip or the ground will phase Dundalk. Look, the problem with Dundalk is Dundalk. Mm. That's the, I mean,
but they've improved a little bit, haven't
they? Yeah, they have. They certainly have. And I love the reaction to go 1-0 down. Sorry, to concede two goals actually, and to respond and get go back quite. I mean, the first goal they scored was a minute and a half after conceding, which is bonkers. Like, you
which
know?
Was only 2 minutes, and then they scored, I think, on four patching.
So at the moment, Dundalk's biggest problem is Dundalk. Mm. Well, you can probably say that it's been like that, you know,
all year.
They've got a great chance. We know they can go and score goals. They've always been a team that can score goals in the way they play, and their away record in Europe is excellent. Mm. You know, they've got a very good. So they'll take huge hope from that. They just can't be giving away stupid goals, like, you know. So that's the worry for me, is that it's an improving ship at the moment, but the game in Tala just shows they're not there yet. Giving away silly goals, so they certainly can't afford to do that over there. But I'll give them a good chance, Al. I would.
Would you?
Yeah. Again, if it's the same ground we played in, it's a stand on one side. It's a, you know, a running track around the pitch, a blue running track or something like that. So it's not an intimidating place to go. I don't know what way the crowd situation is going to be as well. So it's very much a great opportunity for them to get one on the board, but they just can't. They can't concede the goals that they've been conceding at the moment. If they do that, I think they'll get through the tie.
Okay. Well, we wish them well, both of the teams, as I say, in European action. Last weekend, Stu, we had the cup. I just want to run through the results for you before we get to the draw, because the draw has been made since the games at the weekend. but Wexford beat Cabinteely 3-0. UCD, a bit of a surprise, beating Shells 2-0. Stu, didn't see that one coming. Even though UCD have been okay this year in the first division, Shell's obviously running away with the first division. They'd be disappointed with that.
They would, yeah, especially considering they've had the upper hand on UCD in the league this year.
We were at the game in the league.
They were decent, UCD. I'll give them that. A good little side, like, you know. And they, you know, they asked a few questions to Shells in that game anyway, and Shells just kind of pulled away. But they'll be discussing about that, Al. I mean, there's no reason why Shells couldn't have gotten to a cup final. Yeah. I mean, they're a Premier League, they're a Premier Division team.
Yeah.
Absolutely. They have a much better squad than they did last year.
Well, the budget they have as well.
Exactly. They have a very good budget. Shells are going to get promoted, let's be honest. I'd like to see them do in style. I hope they will now they're out of the cup. And I think they'll easily hold their own in the Premier Division.
So that's a big disappointment.
Yeah, absolutely.
St. Pat's were comforted winners 6-0 over Bray. Athlone and Waterford, the game of the round, really, Stu. Absolute madness. Sendings off, goals, extra time goals, late goals, goals from the halfway line. Unbelievable goal, Glenn McCauley. For anyone that didn't see it, check it out. It was unreal. But Waterford advanced on penalties. Shamrock Rovers comfortable 2-0 over Galway. St. Kevin's boys won, killing a man of 4. Keith Foy is looking after killing a man, I think. Maynooth University 4, Malahide 0. Drogheda 1, Derry 1. Kevin Doherty, our friend and good friend, was very, very disappointed, Stu, with the decisions in this game. I don't know if you've seen some of them, but they had two players sent off. Derry were given a penalty as well in the 95th minute. They were very, very disappointed, and it takes a lot for Kevin to be annoyed. He was absolutely raging after the match. But Derry did advance on penalties, so that was the only Premier Division tie as well, so the boys were bitterly disappointed about that. But Derry do advance. Fairview 0, Harps 3. Finn Harps made hard work of that as well. Bangor 0, Longford 5. Colestor Donnycarney 1, Usher Celtic 0. Treaty 0, Dundalk 1. I thought that may have caused a bit of a surprise. Treaty took them to extra time, to be fair. Tommy Barrett's doing a great job, as we know, but Dundalk came through in extra time. McElhenney scoring. Liffey Wanderers 0, Cove 2. Crumlin 1, St. Mochtas 2. I was at that game on Sunday, and Crumlin have lost a lot of players from the Crumlin that I knew last year, the year before. St. Mochtas have a lot of lads who used to play in the league here, so they're a quite experienced side, and
they were comfortable. What made you go to that game?
I love me football, Stu.
He's a great man, aren't you?
A great man for the football.
Well done.
Where
was that played, by the way?
In Crumlin. Good game. It was a decent game. Couple of sendings off as well, and Crumlin will be disappointed because they gave away two sloppy goals. They didn't really have to work for the goals, Mochtas, but they were comfortable throughout St. Mochtas, and they're obviously being drawn against Dundalk in the next round, so that's huge. They have a good lad running in Brian McCarthy. Croy is in charge as well, are helping out with the coaching, so it's good to see the lads.
Jason Crow, is it? I purposely stalled you because we're getting to the biggest result of the weekend.
I'm not happy with this. I'm not even going to call it out. So Corinthians 0, Bowes 5, comfortable for Bowes. And the last one on Sunday, Stu.
What happened?
Sligo Rovers 2, Cork 3.
What happened?
The fucking shambles. That's what happened.
This is obviously the disappointment. This is the problem now is that, you know, and we touched on it off the back of the European game.
Yeah, you mentioned that.
The worry is that all of a sudden the momentum just...
The league, you mentioned it after the European game and it went down to Waterford and lost.
They got beaten.
Here we are, a cup game the following week against Cork City, second from bottom in the first division.
So it's not a blip, Al, like, you know. So, I mean, and it's
again, is that a mental, psychological thing?
It's psychological thing. Absolutely. It's not a physical thing. I can always... It's absolutely a psychological thing. You just can't turn off in this game. You just can't, you know. And it's one thing you notice when you actually retire from the game. I notice when I retire from the game. It took me about 2 years to come around to the idea of going out for a drink or for a meal and having a drink and not leaving at, you know, going out for a meal, not having a Coke and not leaving at 10:30 or things like that. Like, that's, you know.
Like, you mean your disciplined lifestyle.
Your whole, everything when I played football was, no, I can't. Until they got to the side where Nuala said, no, he can't.
Poor Nuala.
He can't.
Poor Nuala.
Wedding, no.
Nuala's a saint.
Yeah, but
I know what you're saying. That's the lifestyle.
That's the lifestyle. You have to be at it on it every day. And it used to fucking drive me mad as well, I mean, especially when we went to Pats. Like, you know, this, I knew I was done in the game when I went to Pats, because
you couldn't.
I walk into the dressing room, all I heard was fucking Nando's. Let's are we going to Nando's in Dundrum? Nando's. I heard, said, here, I'm getting out of this fucking game. I'm fucking gone. That's it. That's the end of it. Yeah. Nando's, yeah, we go hang around Nando's and fucking take pictures of ourselves and like, oh, I'm done.
That is classic.
You know who you are, by the way.
That's a moment of the podcast. That is class.
So
Nando's.
Like, so
the mentality thing.
So
just
Nando's,
wasn't
if you're listening, we're open for sponsorship.
Just wasn't the same there.
It wasn't the fucking same, man.
Of course. And I used to drive you up the walls.
I mean, I can deal with social media. You know, and fellas profiling themselves. That's fair enough, like, you know. But what, like, going to fucking Nando's to have your fucking dinner, like, you know? No, not for me.
So anyway, Stu, I'm fuming because in 10 days they've gone from obviously a very, very winnable, like we spoke about Bowes, the teams they're playing, chance to get into the group stages, a very, very winnable game. They're in the league hunt. Now people are arguing back, oh, they're still in the league hunt, they're only 3 points behind. They're not really for me. And now, to be fair, I did say at the start that I would have been delighted with just getting into Europe. And I felt that was very achievable and that would have been very acceptable because obviously they're building. But the position they found themselves in up there challenging.
Yeah, you got to react to that.
Of course you do.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You got to react to the position you're in. And you have to look around and, you know, and realise we're here now. We've got a chance now. And, you know,
they went to Tala a couple of weeks ago to game on the Monday night and beat Shamrock Rovers.
Absolutely. They got it in the locker, you know. So they have that quality at the moment. It's a psychology thing with them, you know. And it is, you know, it's a big thing, you know, getting it into your head that you have the chance to go and win a league title. It's not something that just gets in there overnight. Like, you know, you have to, going back to what we just said, you have to live and breathe it. Mm. You have to embrace that. It's pressure. Yeah, it's fucking pressure. But it's great pressure.
The game for.
You know, you could be bottom of the league, fucking scrapping for shite. Look at Longford at the moment, but they're still going. Longford,
Cork are second from bottom in the first division,
but they're still
and
going.
Came to the Showgrounds and won.
Yeah, so I mean, you're in a privileged situation, a situation you put yourself in, you know. But you know, no one's going to pat you on the back halfway during the season. I tell you what, they will do. They'll slate you if you let it go.
Well, the fans
that opportunity, and you deserve to get it. You know, you deserve to get it.
They've got nothing but plaudits. We've praised them all along, and they've been great this year, Sligo Rovers, but. That 10 days isn't acceptable, really. As you see, you're either on it or you're not. And you're allowed one game, not three.
No, and three separate competitions as well. You know, so it's a...
Against three very winnable games.
Yeah, and it's had a huge effect on them. And I don't know who they've got this week. Just
Dundalk, Saturday night, a huge game now to have.
Where is that? That's up in Sligo?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's a great chance for them, like, Mio, because obviously depending on what way the European game goes. But I said, again, we also touched on this, the clubs in Europe, Al, are going to get better. The clubs in Europe are going to get better because they're going to benefit from playing against better quality teams. And it's probably, you know, big game for Dundalk tomorrow night. It really is a big game for them. I think this could make their season. You know, if they can win that game, you'll see a big recovery coming around, you know, and what's been an awful first half of the season could be savable, you know, to a certain point. There's still huge issues on, obviously going on at the football club in the background, but the team on the pitch could certainly lead a turnaround. And so that's a huge game for them. But for Sligo, I think that's a game they have to win on Saturday. Absolutely a game they have to win on Saturday. Dundalk aren't in the running for this league title, but Sligo are.
It's the 2nd of August, sorry. So that's what, Monday, is it? Is that the bank holiday? 3 o'clock. But they're the games over the weekend. Obviously, Drogheda playing Waterford. Shamrock Rovers playing Pats. And going to that Friday night, really looking forward to it, Stu. Longford, Derry, Saturday. Sligo and Dundalk then is obviously because both of them teams are in Europe. And Finn Harps are playing Bohemians. But it could be a good game for Sligo to come back into as well, the fact that it's a serious challenge and a serious test against Dundalk.
No, absolutely. I think they have to look at this game now as being the game... which revives their season. Like we say, Dundalk aren't in the running for this league title. They're coming back off a European trip, and they have to bounce back. In fairness to Sligo, they've done it already this year. They had a little blip. Spoke about that probably back in April or so, but they were able to recover. They got to do it again, you know, because.
See, the thing is,
can you imagine what their season's going to be like if they don't win this? No. If they just literally dwindle into fourth?
Well, that's what's so disappointing, Stu. As you said, the three competitions. So the European game was so winnable, right? And I was at the second leg, so winnable, and you're out of that, right? And even if you got through a round, you would have accepted losing to Rosenborg in the next round or whatever, right? Then you have the league game, and as I said, third, I never thought they were going to win the league anyway, but if they finish in the top three, you would have taken that at the start. Now they're in a position to go and win it, so you try and win it, obviously, as you're saying. Yeah. The cup one, though, was a realistic chance to go and win some. They had a chance to win the cup. Any team in the league would have feared playing Sligo Rovers in the cup this year.
Well, here's another way of looking at it, right? So, start of the season, they get off to a flyer, Sligo. Mm. So do Pats. Mm. Rovers... not a flyer to their standards, but got off to a good start. The three of them were head to head, bouncing off each other, three-way competition, right? Look where that's left Sligo. They look huge gap back to Bowes, because they were embracing that competition. Now all of a sudden, only takes a couple of bad results, and you're now in the sights of Bowes, and they're at it at the moment. You know, so
Bowes are flying.
That's another way to look at it. It's because of their early season form, and because they were going toe-to-toe with Pats, and they took on that challenge. Sorry, they're going toe-to-toe with Pats and Rovers. They took on the challenge, and that's lifted them up. You know, so the three of them got a big gap ahead of everybody else.
They're 7 points ahead of Bowes, right?
Well, that's a hell of a gap for this time of the season, Al. But that's two wins and a draw.
And I think Bowes are probably one of the best teams in the league that I've watched this year.
Exactly. So
fantastic.
It just goes to show you the kind of psychologically the headspace Rovers were in. Mm. A good headspace, because look where it's left them. But, you know, it's like anything.
Now, people will argue, here, Stu, right? And they're right. Look, looking at the table, they're only 3 points behind. But what we're talking about is the damage mentally those two results, particularly the European game and particularly the cup game, can do to that league challenge.
Absolutely, yeah. And then, you know, you need to recognise that in the team, and you need to big pressure on them now to go win the game against Dundalk. But it's a game I think they have to win. They have to win.
So the cup draw was made, Stu, last night.
What the fuck did you do here?
Talk to me.
So
I think it's a great draw.
I thought it was, you picked the cold ball first, then you picked the hot ball, then the cold and the hot, and you keep the big teams waiting for each other.
It's my first time ever doing the fucking final. It's my first time ever.
There would have been 500,000 people at it, right? If Bowes and Rovers had been in the final, okay, tickets would have went on sale. They would have been gone in 20 minutes, and they would have been...
They would have had it at Wembley.
They would have extended the Aviva. They would have extended the Aviva for 200,000 capacity. Helicopters flying over, bottles flying over.
Before we get to that, let me just talk you through the draw. So Waterford at home to Kilnamana, Dundalk at home to St. Mochtas, Finn Harps at home to Derry City, another local derby, Maynooth University versus Cove Ramblers, Bowes versus Shamrock Rovers, Cork City... They weren't really rewarded for that great win. They got St. Pat's at home, UCD at home to Longford, and Killester Donnycarney at home to Wexford. But yes, all eyes on tie number 5, Bowes and Shamrock Rovers.
It's gonna be a brilliant draw. It's going to be a first division final now because of you.
No, it won't.
Did you pick out the home team or the away team?
Both.
Did you put two hands in together?
I was on my own. Two hands in together.
Can we do the fucking draw again? Can we?
No, I think it's a brilliant draw.
I think it's a brilliant draw because you did it.
No, I do. I think let them meet each other now. If you're going to win the cup, you're going to have to beat one of them at some stage. So I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, but I'm thinking about more like
the final, the razzmatazz.
Yeah, I want. Because we're getting people back into the grounds now.
Yeah, but you still have could have Bowes. It would have been Bowes Pats final.
It would have been. It would tell you. Do you know what? If it had Bowes and Rovers in the final, it would have been like the World Cup final from '78. You would have big leaflets going everywhere,
toilet roll everywhere,
all over the pitch. Fellas falling over the
Mario
toilet roll.
Kempes.
Mario Kempes.
He would have been invited over for the
Mario
game.
Yeah, Cruyff and everything would have been there. Like fucking, unbelievable. And you go and pick the two of them out together.
No,
you getting a bit of stick for it.
Asher from all angles.
Of who?
Eric
Benanti, Eric Lawler.
Eric's loving it. Eric's
delighted, is he?
Yeah, he just wants to make sure that he's there. And Eric will be there. Play it in the Aviva. That's what
play
they're
playing in the Aviva and let
8,000 in.
50 million people through the game. See what happens.
No, it is. I think it's a great draw. You'll still have Dundalk, Shamrock Rovers final, Dundalk Pats, Bowes Pats, Derry. I think Derry have a chance now after coming through.
Well, they're all delighted with that draw, by the way, because one of the big ones is gone.
Yeah. So you still have, like, you've Minute are still left in it, Kilnamana, Mock does. It's interesting. I've never seen so many kind of lesser.
Did you
teams
say Mock does?
Say Mock does. They'll have a chance. I watched them Sunday. Good side.
Who's anyone we know playing for Mock does? So Crowley's manager.
Michael Daly plays the midfield for them. Who else plays for them?
He must have smashed somebody, did he?
McCaffrey up front scores the goals for them. Who else plays? Robbie Brady's two brothers. Who else?
Liam and
Alan Byrne plays at the back for them. Young lad, Highland in the goals. So you have a decent side. I think they're the strongest in the Leinster Senior League. Yeah. But Crumlin were one of the strongest. And none of their players were playing. I didn't recognise any of them. So it was a disappointing result for them. But that's, busy show, Stu. Busy week. Tomorrow night we have Bowes. I'm really looking forward to the game. I can't wait, actually. Little Harry's coming along with me. So and Friday night I'm in Tala, Shamrock Rovers and Pats. And I'm really looking forward to that. So I have two crackers coming up.
Your holiday. I was tell you where I was. I was in Palma, Mallorca. Ooh. For 40 hours.
And was it lovely?
It was lovely, yeah. But
was your 40 hours in Palma nicer than my 340 in Mullaghmore?
It was. It was much was more. It? Yeah, it was. This was quality over quantity.
You were trolling me at the weekend. You started to troll me. You were like the fellas that slaughter the England players and all. You started to become a troll.
Why? What's a
trolling me about me lovely pictures of the water?
I've had enough of the fucking water stuff.
Love, unreal trip.
Have you not been called up by Hollywood with that amazing cinematography?
Industry.
What is it about water with you, right? Well, you have to get a camera. Point it to the left and move it to the right.
That's the structure.
It's like I found this new camera technique.
I can't believe
Hollywood haven't gotten onto this. Like,
it's the way
the
tide comes in. and the way it crashes against the
rock. I'll tell you what you do. Right? Next time you're out at a beach, right? Get the camera, turn it on, start on the right and move to the left.
Right, we'll try that one.
And I bet you people, you'll confuse the fuck out of people. People, they'll be fucking having mental breakdowns and everything goes.
So you had a nice few hours anyway.
I had a nice few hours, yeah.
Okay.
You
seem rested and relaxed anyway. You're not as angry tonight.
Not as angry now, but I mean, I'd probably be fucking pissed off after this show as soon as I have, you know.
No, it was a good show. Great talking to Gary Dicker. He's a good lad, Gary, so we wish him well. But that's all, folks. Episode 20. As I say, big week for the Irish clubs. We wish Dundalk well. We wish Bohemians really well. Looking forward to the games. Huge game in the league Friday night. Shamrock Rovers against Pats. And obviously Sligo Dundalk Monday as well. And we hope Sligo bounce back to form. But it's been an absolute disaster of a 10 days for them. But a big thanks to Benetti Menswear. Paul, he's not here tonight, but he's with us in spirit. And Stu, thank you as always. See you next week, folks.
See you next week.
Thank you for listening to Cawley's Call, powered by Benetti Menswear. For more interviews like this, please subscribe to my podcast or follow on all my social media channels.